Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The controversial illegal migration bill is set to become law after the government won a series of final votes in the House of Lords. At a protest in Westminster, the author Michael Rosen shared a poem he wrote for the immigration minister.
Paint over Mickey Mouse. Burn where the wild things are. Pulverise the Lego. Set fire to the Christmas tree star. Seize all the teddies. Bury every skipping rope. Paint the walls dark brown. Abolish all hope.
The Commonwealth Games Federation says the decision by Victoria State in Australia to withdraw as host of the 2026 event is hugely disappointing. State Premier Daniel Andrews says it's because of the cost. New figures suggest the number of four-week waits for GP appointments in England is rising. And will.i.am has confirmed he's reuniting with Britney Spears on a new single. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Edward Breslin.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £34 million.
Now that calls for a dance, Dermot.
Yeah, not the best dancer.
Hit it! Dip me, Dermot! Dip me like you've never dipped before!
Get that EuroMillions feeling tonight. EuroMillions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Hello, Chico. Come to Einstein. You know I love tracking the energy we use on our smart meter display. Well, now I've found ways to help us save money on our energy bill. Like shortening showers to 4 minutes. And not leaving appliances on standby. Switch them off at the wall. Exactly. I'll track our energy use on my smart meter display.
Save energy this summer. Search Smart Energy Tips. Eligibility may vary. Consumer action required.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Global Conversations with Julius Baluto is sponsored by Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization. Visit dermashack.co.uk.
Good morning. Welcome to Global Conversations. I'm your host, Julius Baluto, and you're listening to Colorful Radio on colorfulradio.com around the world. Here in the UK, we're on DAB Radio. And of course, Global Conversation is a show that keeps the world talking. Today, this fantastic Saturday morning, we have privileged because I'm with a great man. He's done a lot for Africa, for the world. And yes, I'm talking about Dr. James Owusu. Welcome to the show, my brother.
Thank you, Julius, for having me.
Yes, so I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself before we talk about our subject of the show today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your program. James Owusu, as you mentioned, I am an educationist. Been working in the field of education for the past 21 years. Currently teaching a college in England, southeast of England, in Kent. I originally, you know, was a biomedical scientist by training at university level, but I found myself in the educational sector when I moved down to England for the past 20 years. And I have been teaching since that time in England, but my passion for education led me to visiting different countries to look at their educational, you know, plans and curriculum and how we can improve on our practices. So based on that, I had the opportunity through the European Union and also the British Council and Department for International Development to travel to countries like France, in Bordeaux, to look at vocational and technical education, to Finland in Tampere to look at intercultural education, and also to Rome to look at new skills for new jobs in the 21st century, how we can get young people to develop the skills that we need in the 21st century, you know, to fit in. And also looking at transition, how we can prepare young people or children from primary to secondary education. Currently, I'm starting a new project in Ghana called the Literacy Strategy. And this literacy strategy is based on the fact that during the COVID-19 lockdown for the past year, a lot of children, especially in Africa, have been affected by the digital divide, and also have also been affected severely when it comes to, you know, their learning. So we are starting a literacy project where we get children from disadvantaged background to give them, you know, some support through Book Aid UK. They've donated quite a lot of books that we're going to be starting the project in Ghana this summer. You know, so this is just a little bit about me and what I do. We also look at youth development skills for young people. We also run an internship program where we bring young people from Africa to the UK to work with institutions, companies, and organizations to get the skills that they need for the labor market. You know, so we maybe as we move along, I will elaborate on some of the things that we do. Thank you.
Fantastic. I'm happy I told you to, you know, share with us, because you have done better than I could have even tried to do. So anyways, listeners, our subject today, the most important issue we are focusing on is the challenges of youth development in Africa. And of course, earlier on, I checked all these statistics from Africa Union, and they're talking about Africa being the continent with the most youthful generation. And they're talking about some 400 million youths who happen to be between the ages of 15 and 35. And therefore, my question is, right, Africa, their youths, if we as the world agree that the youths are the future of the world, this current generation will be the one in deciding, making decisions in the future for whatever happens in the world. If we agree that, then the next following question will be, in terms of youth development, is the world, is Africa ready to take those youths to the level they should be? Is Africa ready to embrace this generation, and whether it's employment, whether it's to nurturing dreams and achieving them? Is Africa ready? Are we ready? Because when we talk about youths in Africa, we are living in a global community, interconnected world. So therefore, these youths in Africa is not just a business of Africa. Just like youths from any other continent, they crisscross the globe, working, learning, educating themselves, and therefore is still a factor for the rest of the world. So is the world ready for these youths to be prepared for the future?
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Is Africa ready to prepare this number of youths for their future? And there are many aspects when it talks preparing. We're talking about education, talking about employment. So there are many different aspects. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that looking at the figures that you mentioned, over 400 million youth in Africa within the ages of 15 to 35, is staggering. I mean, when you look at the number, and we know the challenges that Africa is facing when it comes to youth unemployment. And I mean, from what I know and my experience working with young people in Africa, especially in most sub-Saharan African countries, the issue is a disconnect between the skills that people are looking for and the kind of you know, the training that they get, and also what the employers are looking for. Well, I mean, the problem I see here now in terms of our readiness is skills. A lot of young people have graduated, you know, from our universities, but they don't have the prerequisite skills that the employers are looking for. In 2003, for example, the European Union, they realized that the kind of, you know, skills that employers are looking for to fit into the labor market, a lot of young people were not having it. And as a result of that, they have to change their curriculum. They have to change the way young people are trained from high school all the way to university. And I was fortunate to be part of the team to draft the new skills for new jobs in the 21st century in Rome. Now, I look at what they did, and even looking at Europe, you know, an advanced country, they have to restructure. They have to change the curriculum to make sure that it fits into the 21st century. And as a result of that, you know, working with employers, working with stakeholders, working with universities, they were able to change the system, the educational system, in order to make provisions for young people to get the skills that the labor market and employers are looking for. If you come down to Africa, as you mentioned, the unemployment rate is too high. And one of the reasons has to do with lack of skills. Not that there are no jobs, there are certain jobs that cannot be filled because young people don't have the skills. For example, if you look at this tripartite system, the universities, the employers, the government, you will find out that the universities are supposed to train, educate young people to be fed into the labor market. The employers are complaining that the kind of youth that are coming into their job market don't have the skills that they're looking for. So the blame is who is responsible to that kind of training. So unless universities work with government and employers to identify the skills that they need within the job market, and also collaborate with the universities to give them the necessary training. Because let's face it, most of our universities in Africa, they don't teach young people about 21st century skills. University is a place where the you know, young people acquire knowledge and do research. So I think that we need to change our educational landscape to prepare young people for the job market. And one other thing I've also realized, which is also affecting the you know, youth in Africa, is the kind of courses that we do. Now, we need to identify the needs within our local community. And based on the needs within our local community, we use local materials to solve local problems. I can give you an example like Ghana. Ghana recently changed the educational system to make it free up to 18 years when you finish senior high school. 2 years ago, 38% of young people who finished senior high school were qualified to go to university. 38%. Now, the remaining percentage, what do you do with them? They can't go to university because they don't have the qualification to do so. So I think what we need to do is to structure our educational system in such a way that it shouldn't be more of theoretical base. It shouldn't be more of, you know, the service sector, but we should develop the middleman power where we can develop young people into skills so that we can get them out of unemployment. Look, if you look at the UK, for example, in the 80s when Margaret Thatcher was in power, the focus was in the service sector. And they realized that, you know, in the early 90s towards the 20s, the population increase, you know, resulted the fact that they will need more skilled young people in the building market to build more houses to accommodate the ever-increasing population. So they started training people, but it wasn't enough. So they have to bring in people from Eastern Europe because they lack those skills. And this is what is happening in Africa now. And some few years to come, we're going to have a serious problem within our middleman power. So most of the people who are unemployed, you mentioned between the ages of 15 and 35.
Yeah.
Why are they unemployed? They don't have skills.
Exactly.
They don't have skills. And if you don't have skills, you cannot get a job. No one will employ you. So what I think that we need to do as Africans in the developing world, as we are called, because of lack of infrastructure and all these social amenities that are necessary, according to WHO and the labor market, ILO, to make sure that all citizens do have access to these things. What we need to do is to restructure our educational system. I put up a proposal some time back that, look, don't let us push everybody to go to university. There is nothing wrong going to university. However, let us look at the cohort of young people who have the skills to do certain things, but they don't have the academic ability to progress to university. And that's what I spent some time in Finland to study. Finland has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the world. How did they do it? Look, it's not rocket science. We don't need professors to come and tell us, to lecture us. All that we have to look at is when young people are in secondary school, which is the compulsory school age, up to when you get to 18 and then you want to go to university, that's fine. Let us identify them in the latter part of secondary education. If the child is not an academic product, what channel can we put the child in? What route? So by the time the child leaves secondary education, he has the skills to do something. One of the proposals I put forward was very simple. Let us identify within every district, every local community, how many plumbing companies are there? How many hospitality companies are there? How many engineering companies are there? How many farmers are there? How many electrical installation companies are there? How many building companies are there? Let us identify children who are not in education, who have left school because they didn't pass mathematics, because they didn't pass English, they can't get to university. Let the government work with the local businesses and say to them, look, if you can take 3-4 people in your plumbing business and train them, you will get a tax rebate. We will put in maybe $20 a week or a month to support these young people to get skills. They do 2 days in school and maybe 3 days in the employment area. So by the time they leave school, they have the skills.
Yeah.
That is exactly what is being done in Finland. So the question of, are we ready? We are not ready.
Yeah, so you're listening to Global Conversations. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. We are going for a quick break. Don't go away.
Colorful radio.
Global Conversations with Julius Baluto is sponsored by Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization. Visit dermashack.co.uk.
Welcome back. Yeah, I've seen in the UK, especially after the post-COVID era, it's not over yet, so we cannot successfully say post-COVID. We are still somewhere towards the end, I hope. I've seen a strategy by the UK government to work with employers who are willing to give internship to students and young people, and they kind of get kind of as some money from the government to achieve that. So I think that's what you're advocating for, to get them some skills.
And even if you look at the UK government, it's not just only about just putting in money to, you know, give them apprenticeship. They are retraining. That is the key, because the COVID has caused a lot of problems such that people have to retrain to get new jobs to do.
Yeah.
People have lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Not because they are not good. The job is no more there. Some of these retail shops have closed down. Some of office big jobs have closed down. So people have to retrain to look for new jobs. And that is the flexibility that we have. And this is something that we can emulate. Look, I don't know. I don't have the figure for how many people have been affected by COVID in Africa. It's going to be enormous.
It's a lot. When you talk about, for example, the industry, hospitality industry, you see so many chains of hotels, resorts are shutting down. So I think it's not properly documented, but the impact is huge. And probably one of the challenges that I found was that there weren't, in many countries across Africa, there weren't clear structures of support. Like, what am I saying? In the UK, when you see the government wanted to support employers to keep their employees, they came up with a furlough scheme. And you, exactly. Employer, they know what to do, where to do it. They know that. But in some countries in Africa, you see, they have money, but sometimes it's just announcement which don't help you. Like, we have injected 15 billion into the industry, but no one says, how are you doing it? How are you doing it is the most important question in this all. Because you may say so, but no one will ever access that money because you did not tell them how to go about it simply. And maybe there's no structure. And a lot of corruption is also happening that way, which doesn't help the situation. And now, Doctor, let's talk about a different issue. There has been this issue, you know, like, it's not an allegation, it's an observation that in modern education, a lot of students are taught things that may never be of use to them in their life. I'll give you an example. When you go to Africa, I mean, from primary to sometimes secondary school, they'll make you recite and know all the cities of the world, all the types of butterflies there is, and all types of caterpillars as well. And then you come out of school and no one bothered whether you know this is the city of France or UK or no one is bothered. It's a question of exactly what you are saying now. What can you do? What skill do you have that can be useful? So I don't know how true it is in Africa, probably even in the UK and the other countries in the world. Is it that a lot of students end up being trained on all these subjects they may never use in their lives?
That's an interesting question, Julius. I think that we live in a global world now that we are all interconnected. And I will just use UK as an example, and that may also resonate to other part of the the world, especially in Africa. Look, we if you look at UK in our syllabus right now, we are teaching Mandarin as an example. I mean, just to buttress the point that you're making. Now, why are we teaching Mandarin, which is one of the most spoken language in the world? In fact, more people speak Mandarin than any other language in the world, which is spoken in China. Why are we teaching Mandarin in our schools? Because we know China is a global competitor in the global market, and a lot of young people are going to China to trade. So it's essential that we need to teach our young people how to speak Mandarin. I was having a meeting with some students in Ghana, and we were looking at these kind of unemployment issues in Africa and talking about flexibility in terms of changing jobs in order to meet the local market. And one of the things that I suggested to some of them was that, look, people may not see this. To learn Mandarin as an example, go to Tanzania, go to Zambia, go to Uganda, go to Ghana. Everybody is trading with China. Most of our goods come from China. People go to China to buy stuff, to ship them to Africa. And I met a lady who was going to China one time, and she was going to make this canned fish with her brand name on it. And he was carrying a sample of that canned fish to China. And I said, why are you carrying this to China? And he said, because I can't speak the language. So when I take it to China, all that I need to say to the factory people is that same, same, same. I want it like this. You understand?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Lack of these guys. So the point I'm making is, I was just using as an example.
Yeah.
Why can't we learn Mandarin and someone can start teaching these business women and businessmen how to speak Mandarin? Set up your own tutorial center. That is creating a job. It doesn't matter if it's going to take 3 months to learn Mandarin to be more creative, to support yourself, to get yourself a job. That is good because we are trading with China. So some of the things that we did learn in school might not be relevant these days. And that is why there's been a change in the curriculum. Most countries are changing their curriculum. Some of the things that we used to teach our young people are irrelevant in the 21st century. What are some of the things that we need to teach our young people? It's not about, you know, how to recite this and that and that. It's about critical thinking. It's about problem solving. It's about identifying fake news. It's about working with a team. It's about knowing how to analyze things to come up with an outcome. These are the skills that we need. Look, Finland, I always use Finland. Recently, they've changed their curriculum to teach young people about how to identify fake news.
Wow.
Teaching young people, because there are fake news in the system and it's affecting our young people, their mindset and their thinking. So yes, if children can identify fake news, they know that this is what we need to do. We don't side with what people are saying or what people are doing. So it is very crucial that African leaders, African countries, to look at our own needs. We don't copy, cut and paste. Let's look at our needs. What do we need in terms of our economic development? A lot of universities in Africa, everybody is setting up university. What are the courses that we are doing in our universities? People have completed universities and no jobs. I bring in young people, almost 30 students every year from Africa to come to England, to the UK, to do internship. I started this program because I realized that a lot of university graduates don't have the skills that employers are looking for. And shockingly, before the lockdown, some of the kids, students who came to London, the employer said to me, "Are these university graduates?" I said, "Yes." I said, "What? They can't even write report. They can't write report." And some of them have got first class and second class up. So we need to change what we are teaching our young people. It's not only about books and knowledge. It's about skills. How we can solve problems. How we can think critically. How we can work in a team. These are the things that I think we need to start teaching our young people, especially when they are in the early stages, primary to secondary, before they get to university. Because when they are in university, you don't have time to teach them those skills. It's too late, because university, they're acquiring knowledge.
Yeah.
They are not being taught skills. They are acquiring knowledge. So we need to start from primary all the way through secondary so that they can build up that foundation when they go to university. So I think that we need to look at some of the things that we teach our young people in our universities and our secondary schools, change the curriculum and make it relevant to our 21st century world.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At Dermashack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Indeed. Yet when we look into Africa, I think most of the key players, stakeholder, is the government to drive the youths out of employment and prepare them for the future. But when we look into how some African governments handle their business, that has caused a lot of unemployment and disorientation. Because, as you rightly put it, we've got so many universities churning out graduates. But some of the graduates coming out of the university, some of them don't have the relevant skills. But for those who do, let's say for argument's sake, for those who do, like engineers, right? They'll come out of university hoping to be the future, you know, leaders in this particular sector, engineering. But yet they're confronted by a government that has given the Chinese companies contract, and the Chinese companies came with their own employees from China. And you find out your local engineers cannot be of use in particular projects such as that. So therefore, what's the point of even learning is the question I hear a lot of graduates asking, because whichever way you look at it, you find the government, what the governments are doing doesn't really help them, you know. And there are no structures like we give an example of the UK. We were like, okay, government tries to be sensitive and does something about it. But these African governments, some of them, they are not even doing anything. And even from the point of Africa Union, they are not doing anything. What can we do, really? Because
look, look, you've made a very important point about the. I mean, the investors coming to Africa, you know, let's use China, for example. The Sino-African project is a massive multi-billion dollar project going on in most sub-Saharan African countries. It's unquestionable. The volume of money flowing to Africa from China is enormous. Now, there are problems here when it comes to the, you know, assigning contracts and the deals. What we know is that most of these contracts that are being, you know, executed in Africa, there are strange conditions attached to it. How on earth can our government accept the fact that if China is building railways or building roads, they have to have a percentage of their employees from China to work there as part of the deal? We have to come up and say, look, we need to reform this. We need to give a sizable and a decent percentage for our local engineers. But because we depend on China's funds to build our roads, because they're bringing in the investment, we don't. So it's affecting our local engineers as well, as you mentioned. It's a fact. So what can the AU do? Look at the AU. They're together, very strong. Their trade deals, fair trade system, and even you could see what is happening between even the EU and the UK when it came to this vaccine production by AstraZeneca in Brussels. Look at the trade war they're having with them. Why can't we as Africans do something? Someone was talking about, why can't we even produce some of these vaccines in Africa? We can. India is producing AstraZeneca vaccines to be supplied to most of the countries in the world. India.
True.
Why India? Because they've set up an investment. They built a multi-million dollar lab, and the Indians have the capacity, the knowledge, and the skills to do that job. So AstraZeneca have built up a center there where they're producing vaccines, the corona vaccines, to be supplied even to not only UK, but to
Africa,
other
too.
Parts of Africa.
Yep.
So why can't the AU? Look at the AU. Look at the AU. Said, so look, let's come together as Africans, set up a fund, build a massive lab even either in Nigeria or South Africa, where we can produce our own vaccine. Where we can produce our own vaccine. British government has to put in money, invested massively in Oxford AstraZeneca before any country even started. They put in a lot of money because they want to look after their own people. What about Africa? What about Africa? We go begging. We are being given vaccines as part of the deal to support other developing countries. Why? Selfishness, greed, and lack of sensitivity for the local citizenship. So I think that we need to change our mindset. We need leaders who will look into the welfare of its own people. Because other than that, look, we've vaccinated over 25 million people in the UK.
Yeah.
How many people have been vaccinated in Africa? How many?
Very few.
I don't know.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge that Africa faces, because when I look at exactly what's happening, as we pointed out clearly, you know, Chinese came to Angola. They built this, whatever they were calling it, ghost city. Ghost city is just a chain full of cheaper housing within the city. So much, and whenever they do that, whichever country they go, they obscure the locals. So if you're into property industry, just no one is paying attention to you. There's someone else with big money. And that has been actually replicated in many places in Africa. Talk about Zambia. We have seen in Zambia, for example, this staff who were working for the in Chinese factories and farms, not being allowed to go home for 2 months until the whole country began to scream. And the reason given by these companies' bosses were, we don't want them to go home because if they come back to company, they're going to bring corona with them. Ironically, because Corona's origins traced back all the way to China, but this is happening in Africa. So what I sense, there is collusion between the governments of African countries and the Chinese as to all these conditions attached. One day it will be clear, but at the moment it's not very clear. But what is happening is embarrassing, because it's not money that they're investing. It's a loan your country has taken. So it's not free money.
Yeah.
How do you as a shopkeeper go to the bank and the bank gives you money and they come to run the shop that you own shop and they count the profit for you as well? How nice.
Yeah.
And yet you have to pay back the loan with interest.
Yeah, and the interest rates are quite high.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. They're quite
high. If you look at the Chinese loan, it's quite high.
Yes. It's comparable to Shylock, you know, Shylock loan.
Yeah.
And even their methods of getting their money back is rather ruthless.
Yes.
We have seen them possess, was it the power in Zambia, the power company in Zambia?
Yeah.
And a port, I think, in Sri Lanka. So it's like a bit more ruthless, like Shylocks do it.
You see, and the reason why these are going on is this influx of China going into Africa is that, you know, most of these rogue regimes, they, you know, the Chinese are not interested in your political affairs. They don't care about your human rights records. You know, and because our leaders are not treating their own citizens well, how do you expect the Chinese to treat your own people? You were mentioned in Zambia. You stay in 2 months. You can't go back home because you're going to bring corona. You can't do this in Europe.
No.
Where is your human right?
You'll be shut. Your company.
Where is your human right?
Prosecuted.
Look, I've seen some of these things in Ghana where, in fact, a foreigner pour chili onto a worker's, an employee's face, nearly blinded the person. And where is that human right? People are being abused because our government have sold our birthright. They don't have any respect. Look at, you know, it's very sad that we don't have leaders who think about the welfare of their own people. It's sickening. You visit some countries in Africa in the 21st century and people are still sitting under trees to study. In the 21st century, children don't have access to clean drinking water. In the 21st century, girls don't have sanitary pads. They've been taxed so much that they can't afford to buy. In the 21st century, children go to school hungry. In the 21st century, children walk barefooted to school. You know, this is unacceptable.
Totally unacceptable.
You see children carrying their own chairs and table to school. Some sit on rocks. Some write in the sand. I've seen this with my own eyes. It's appalling. It's unacceptable. And young African ministers have 6-7 cars, 4-wheel drives. Within 4 years of being appointed, they have 6 houses. They have cars. They bought houses in Dubai. They bought houses in America and in England. Within 4 years. This is sickening. And our young children don't have access to basic needs for their education. So I think that young people should rise up. We need to change their mindset. And we need to use our energy to campaign for the fundamental rights of our young people. That is what we need to do. Look at what happened in London recently when a young lady was killed.
Yeah.
Look at what all the women did. They even disregarded COVID rules and went there to protest. And based on that, the government is listening.
Indeed.
They've started putting in money. This is the kind of energy we need in Africa, where young people will say, no, enough is enough. We cannot sit down and wait for our young children to be sitting under trees to go to school. And people are spending millions of dollars on stupid things, buying cars, buying houses, buying first class tickets for their girlfriends to abroad, buying cars for their girlfriends' birthday parties. And children can't even have access to even clean drinks.
Colorful radio.
It is sad.
It is sad.
And even when we look into leadership in Africa, which is probably what you are really reflecting on, you find situations whereby those in power, governments, MPs, they don't come up with bills that are so much relevant to the people who elected them. I've seen some past bills in some parliament in Africa to give maybe medical care, for men to be allowed to marry more than one wife. You just want to ask yourself, why is that an issue? And how urgent is it? There are some unemployed youths somewhere. They should be talking about things that matter to the future of the youths, not about their own interests. And then you see also, they have to be paid sitting allowance. If you don't want to sit and work, why can't you work standing? You already have a salary and house allowance. And even servants who are being paid for by the government.
Yes.
It's totally unheard of. And I do think that's a challenge African youths are facing. Because most of the time you meet with them, they're like, most of them, what's even the purpose of education? Because they've been like tarmacking, they've been on the road looking for these jobs. And you know, very interesting situations, like in the building of SGR rail in Kenya. You see Kenyans going to protest on the rail being built to be given jobs, and you know, one end up being shot by the Chinese guards and it dies, and then, is this your country or is it not your country? You just look at the way things are happening in kind of disheartening. But it's not even the engineers, the other professions as well. When you come out of university, you have the knowledge, but to practice and learn a skill, you never had a chance. So therefore, I want also to maybe reinforce what you're saying. How about governments working together with universities? That networking, that coming together is very important, because when you come out of the uni, most of the time, even now here, they don't look into how well you performed. Even if when you have a distinction, they don't ask you. They ask, what's your experience?
Yeah.
And I do mentorship in City University in journalism as well. And most of the time, I speak to students. And one of the challenges students face is when they go to look for jobs. And every employer wants to know your experience.
Exactly.
You are a brand new graduate. So it's like, why can't you give me the job to have the experience? Because you know I'm a brand new graduate. But for employer, they don't want their time to be wasted.
No, they are interested in their business.
It's business. Yeah, it's not hate. Yeah. It's nothing. It's just business.
Yeah. I want money. I'm not interested in coming to train you. I want someone who is trained already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And then the youth complain that, if you don't give us the opportunity, how are we going to get the training? That's where some of them you have to do internship. Some of them you have to volunteer to do certain projects to get the skills.
Yeah. Yeah, true. And then I had this student joking as well. It was like, student went to look for a job, and this employer said to him, okay, do you have any experience? He says, no, because he was a fresh graduate. And then just for like a joke, he says, if you don't have the experience, how much would you like to be paid doing this job? And the poor student say, I really want a lot of money. and therefore employer says, why would you want to a lot of money when you have no experience? And then student says, you realize that doing the job without the experience is harder. That's why I need to be paid a lot.
Absolutely.
That's why I need to be paid a lot. It is a challenge to graduates. And yes, you're right. The education systems need to be changed. Gone are the days when it was important for an African student to know when Vasco da Gama visited Africa.
No.
Or when Dr. Livingstone went to Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe.
Exactly. Absolutely.
No, no one is interested.
No. Look, I was speaking with a deputy head teacher on Saturday, and he was on a panel when they interview teachers. And, you know, and he was saying to me that, look, we had people with PhD applying for a job to teach mathematics. To teach mathematics and some to teach physics. And when they look at their CV, they haven't had any teaching experience. Though they have the knowledge, they don't have teaching experience. And they have a PhD. And they had someone who doesn't have a PhD, who doesn't have a master's degree, just a first degree and a PGCE, but with 3 years teaching experience. They took that person. If it were to be in Africa, they would take the one with PhD. True. That's the stupidity there. That is the stupidity. And this is the problem we are having. The fact that you have a PhD doesn't mean that you're going to solve that problem. No. Well, basically, a PhD holder should solve problems. That's what PhD is all about. Use your knowledge to solve a problem. However, people are doing all these. Look, first degree is nothing in Africa these days. If you have a first degree, you are nothing. If you want to get a job, you must have a master's degree in Africa now.
Yeah.
I'm using Ghana as an example.
Most countries too.
Yes. If you don't have a master's degree, forget it. No one will give you a job. You won't even get promotion. And if you don't have a PhD, you will never get a contract as a consultant. Tell me, how many PhD holders in UK? How many PhD holders in UK do we have that are in top positions? No. The skills, the experience, and what you're going to bring into the business.
Yeah.
How are you going to transform to make us get money? That's what they are interested in. What are you bringing on board? That's what we are interested in. We don't care about whether you're a professor or a PhD. We are not necessary. It's not necessary. What we need is the skills that you have to deliver.
It's true.
So it's, look, you and I know, in England, a plumber earns more money in a year than even a graduate who has been to university, working in a bank somewhere or in a financial institution. But in Africa, the middleman power is relegated.
Yeah.
If you're a plumber, nobody likes you. Excuse me to say, if you're a plumber and even you are looking for a woman to marry, they look at what job do you do? A plumber, a builder. Oh, forget it. Nobody likes you.
It's true.
But the moment you say that you work in a bank,
yeah,
The moment you say that you work with a ministry or whatever in an office with your tie,
yeah,
then they like you because you are a gentleman.
Yo, if you have a PhD.
you have a PhD. A friend of mine was saying to me that, you know, he has to go and enroll to do a PhD because, you know, he teaches in a university. He's not being promoted.
Yeah.
Some of even his students have bypassed him to do their PhD and they've been promoted and he's still where he is. Yeah. But he's got more experience than those who even have done the PhD. Yeah, and because they did the PhD, they are the boss now.
And that's the way Africa works. Yeah, that's the way Africa works.
That we need to change our mindset, and then the way we see education, you know, the way we see education and the kind of people that we need into the labor market. Other than that, we will continue to be facing these kind of challenges.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Global Conversations. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. It's the best way to put it, and of course, to end it. I was feeling like we are just starting, but when I look at time, it's really gone. it's really, time is not on our side, but probably we'll just revisit this once again, because it's a very important, you know, subject to tackle. And it's global, not even African, it's global. Wherever we are, these challenges have a way of finding themselves in different countries at the same time. Yeah, so it's been a pleasure in the studio. I've been with Dr. James Owusu, and it's been really great to have you. And also, thank you, listeners, for being with us. As we end Global Conversation, stay tuned for more programs from Colorful Radio.
So, Africa in Focus.
Who told you bad man don't dance? Who told you gangsters don't dance? Even with a on my hip, I dance. Bad man, take another sip and dance. Two left feet, don't trip and dance. The girl want me, I might give her a chance. Give her a look, she give me a glance. You wore that tight dress just to enhance. You're like a bum bum. Never seen you before, where you come from? You got a fat, I got a lung. And I will never met you at random. This must be destiny, that's why you're next to me. You feel like ecstasy. This must be destiny, that's why you're next to me. You feel like ecstasy.